Alright, battle buddies.
Take three. We're having some major issues, but we're back, ready to recap.
Yeah, we tried a couple times on the laptop, and it disagreed with us, so we're going to use my phone and see how it goes. So, we're recovering from dinner with the vamps.
That was a unexpected turn.
Yeah. That was the big highlight, which, you know, will probably be the biggest talking point, so we'll get to that last. And, you know, I think at this point we've gone over, like, all the major NPCs other than, like, Alistair and, like, Pogo. But, you know, they're just kind of brought up here and there, which I think, you know, throughout doing more episodes, everyone will get a feel for who they are.
They're just more a fun side NPC.
Yeah. So, the major things we had happen was, Mercy and Orion, they went on their date, their awkward, introverted lunch date.
That was a treat to listen to. I would have loved to have been an IRL fly on the wall to a date like that. That was a treat.
Yeah, just have like, not even a high-level wizard, just somebody that could polymorph.
That would
just
be,
yeah, or a disguise self even. Disguise self is only first-level spell.
Make it work.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a lot of fun, especially stepping into, you know, the one-on-one, not even necessarily romantic, but, you know, the personable terms of Mercy and Orion and portraying Orion on that end.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see even more of him.
Yeah.
Because he's been a very interesting character throughout.
Oh, yeah, we met him in, like, our first or second session. We're around 15 sessions in right now, and he's been pretty consistent. I think he's only missed maybe, like, two total sessions where he wasn't brought up or in person.
He's been around a lot.
Yeah, and those first few weeks of meeting him, we weren't sure if he was an ally or an enemy at all.
Yeah, he was hard to read at the beginning.
Exactly. Which is what I wanted, especially in this campaign. I want to play with that gray area more of, are you a friend or are you an enemy? Are you going to stab us in the back or not?
Yeah.
Obviously, Orion isn't going to do that. His intentions are very clear now, but it took, you know, 10 plus sessions to really learn all of that about him.
Yeah.
You know, especially the connection he has with Alexandra, with Mercy's mom. You know, that was one of the big things about their date. Especially the Polaroids, the pictures of him as a baby with Mercy's mom. Because that was her first time ever seeing her mom.
You know,
for a character, that's a really big deal. And I love how Jen handled it, especially. Just being like, yeah, I'm going to sit there in silence for a little bit.
Right, and, like, actually taking in the moment of, like, what do I do?
Yeah, exactly. And that wasn't, like, Jen or Mercy being like, I'm uninterested. That's the character, you know. Imagine in real life if you never met your parents and then suddenly pulls out a Polaroid picture of them. You know, you're going to sit there and process for a moment.
What did I just see and put it together?
You know, and, you know, him picking her up in the Impala. Obviously, that was just kind of, like, rope her in. Offering to go to Eduardo's. Obviously, he knows what her favorite place is. And then that drive home of the love songs, you know, time after time, and like, I was like, okay, just let me change the station. 1,000 years started, you know, just every possible, you know, big romantic song of the past few decades.
That was not his night for smoothness.
And, you know, obviously she was very confused because it was her first date ever. She's not even sure if she likes the guy, so she started like texting Karos, Felix, and Zeke, and it was like, okay, in the middle, like, as Orion, in the middle of my date is texting three other guys?
I didn't think about that, yeah. And it's all guys that she constantly hangs around with, and he knows.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor bastard.
Yeah. So there was a lot of insecurity on his end, which, you know, I didn't want to push, but it was, you know, if you're on a date with a girl and you're constantly texting, you're going to have some doubts in yourself. Yeah, like, am I boring? Is this not interesting? Do I suck?
Do I suck? Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, but that was a blast. That was great. The school was honestly pretty uneventful. The one big thing that happened, you and Felix both rolled very poorly on. Which you later found out that Nancy wasn't necessarily spying, but she was keeping an eye on you guys.
Of course.
It's just, I think you both rolled like below a 10 on your perception checks.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and your wisdom is negative in the first place, so it's hard for you to be perceptive in the first place. But yeah, other than that, the only big thing that I had in store was, what is Felix going to do with Leslie? Which Carol's kind of took the reins on that and gave him like a day off.
I felt sorry for the kid.
Yeah.
He was pushing him so hard.
Yeah, which I already have something in store for the next day when we get there in game for how Leslie is going to show a thanks.
Oh, basically Leslie's going to say thanks.
In his own special Leslie type kind of way.
I know exactly almost what that translates into, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, and it is because, like, yeah, sure, these PCs don't know much about Leslie, but he's a carryover NPC from a prior campaign where he was known as Four Fingers. It's just, he has all his digits for the time being, so we're actually going to see, you know, the prequel to how he became Four Fingers.
Shoot, yeah, we put this before all of our Hail Mary stuff, so he's Five Fingers right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so we get to see the story and, like, all of that unfold before us, how he gets this title, this attitude, all this stuff. I mean, he already openly talked about how he killed his dad, and it was just so he could keep the rest of the treasure.
He was dying anyways, I says.
Yeah. Well, when you hear, like, that kind of, like, New Jersey-ish, New York-ish with the I says, you know exactly who's talking to you.
Yeah, you're in for a treat.
Yeah. And other than school, we did have Zeke, once again, poor guy, epically fail at his surgery. Because we left off with him rolling a nat 1, and then I think he rolled like a 6 total.
He was trying.
Yeah. And you know, it's not even me like picking on him or anything like that. It is not that at all.
That's how the dice roll.
Yeah, and the way I see it is, you know, that question can come up in the first place is, this is his day-to-day job. Why is he rolling a skill check in the first place? And it's not to see how poorly or how well he does. The way I tied it in, roped it in, which I'm not sure has even come out in game, is Zeke is still so new to magic. If you remember
that
correctly, when we had that one shot where we introduced his character, he was like, yeah, I'm still brand new to this.
It's so not from that, he's new to medicine, he's new to magic and medicine.
Yeah, like, he has, you know, he's had this job for a while, but the fact is now that he's magical, Dr. Woods, his boss, noticed that, like, oh, you're seeing everything I'm seeing, I can pull you off, you know, all this stupid ER of somebody coming in with a headache, and now I can finally get some assistance with all of these weird and crazy magical illnesses. So Zeke hasn't even seen the magical illnesses before. This is his first time experiencing people who are magically sick.
Oh,
that's why he's
God.
Rolling skill checks.
No, that makes much more sense now.
Yeah, where if somebody came in with like a broken arm, Zeke knows how to
there.
Yeah, I don't even think I'd ask for a skill check, and if I would, it would be rolled with advantage at the very least. The reason why he's rolling for these is because, you know, like Chester, he had inner combustion, magical sickness.
Boom.
This Jane Doe, she had summoning sickness.
Oh.
Yeah, remember that? How it's like, oh, she must have done like a lot of conjuration or something, so now we need to cool her down and get in there. Again, it's a magical sickness. When he has his first like muggle come in, you know, it's like I said, somebody that just has a broken arm, it's an easy day, you know. You get throughout without having issue. It's the fact that all these people are magically sick.
That's where the issues
yeah.
come in.
Yeah, where, you know, the next time somebody comes in with inner combustion, I can have him roll with advantage. He's seen this before. He knows what to do. Him and Sigil did that surgery with ease.
That, so he even has good experience with it. It's not like he's failed it.
Yeah, where, like, if somebody comes in with summoning sickness again, I can't give him advantage on that because he had the nat one.
Might be able to go with a DC.
That's exactly what I'm going to do. You know, lower it by, you know, if it was 20, make it 15 instead. But, you know, I can't treat summoning sickness the same way that I'm going to treat inner combustion, for example, because that was a blaring success, where this was an epic failure where he got his ass chewed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, rightfully so.
Yes.
You know, but it wasn't like George being upset. No, I mean, I don't care what you roll. What you roll is what you roll. It was, I'm Dr. Woods, I'm a lead surgeon, and my second hand, you know, my right-hand man is fucking failing me. He's pissed. He's gonna be pissed.
Yeah.
Other than that, for Zeke, he talked with Lindsay a bit, you know, the hot muddle nurse. Honestly, that's all she is she's just like...
And, that hot, blonde nurse, fresh out of nursing school.
Yeah, and it's a bit of an experiment to see, like, how much I can poke at Zeke, because Zeke is, like, so innocent and so pure. It's, you know, is he gonna catch on to when she has, like, her top three buttons undone and she leans in? Like, is he gonna catch on to, holy shit, I got, like, some 38 double Ds being pushed in my face?
Well, now he's going to, because he said it on the podcast and he listens, but...
Well, I mean, still, in-game, out-of-game, you know, and so on. And I even spoke with him about it, too, that Zeke is interested in Meteora the most. That Clockwork Soul sorcerer, the little gnome that had, like, all the cog.
She is pretty cool.
Yeah, she's really cool, and, you know, rightfully so. That should definitely be who, you know, Zeke would be the most interested in, but it's like, how much can I poke at him with Lindsay?
Right.
That it's honestly just like a DM social experiment of how far can I push him until he does something, which it's just smart. Fun. Yeah. On my end, it's just fun. You know, I do the same thing with Leslie to Felix. How much can he get away with? How much of a shithead can I be until... I made one of them react. Yeah. And then we prepped for our dinner with the vamps. We saw, the big thing was seeing Alistair. He's a half-dwarf tiefling. Pure chaos. Has an Asmir friend? Employee that he actively tortures. Rightfully so, the group just wanted some intel information. What should we expect out of this Nyx family, out of these vampires? And he went on to tell you guys about the varieties, which you're probably not going to really find anywhere else, like the Mind Drinker ones. I'm not even sure if I got that name right, because I just based it off of the vampires that are in Ravnica. Those ones that like sap like mental energy and memories and stuff.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they, you know, by the book are called Mind Drinkers, but that's who they are. There were the classical ones, the Dracula types, you know, a lot like Ulrich from our first campaign. And the third variety was my homebrew, the Noor vampires, who are the actual and it's gonna drive rules lawyers crazy. These are the good vampires, the ones that don't kill humans or consume human blood or anything like that, which it's been done a lot before in movies and television and media.
You had Twilight where technically they were vegetarian esque vampires.
Yeah, exactly. And these Noor vamps, they just base everything on animal blood. So they're big hunters, trappers, ranger types. Probably shouldn't be a druid, because that could end poorly.
I didn't think about that. That's the only time you'd be on the receiving end of harm from these guys.
Yeah, whoops. We didn't know.
I didn't know you were a druid. Now I'm dying.
That's a lot of necrotic damage.
Oh, that sucks.
So anyways, We got all prepped from Alistair and stuff, and we rolled in to the next family manor. They live in the far, far northern end of the Lady Lights district. They border the 3 o'clock. So they're even up past the Carson marshlands, where we fought the Hollowlanders, mm-hmm. where we met Cedric and Marco and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, they rule. I know.
Yeah, they do.
Where you threw Felix. That was hilarious.
I wish I could do it again.
Yeah, we saved Callie when we were there, too.
That was a fun little experiment with the underwater saving.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of that was Mercy because of just being willing to sacrifice her action to dash, to swim more, because, you know, the water rules get so fucky that it's like, okay, just give me, like, a couple athletics checks, because I do believe athletics, like, by the book is swimming and climbing. And maybe it can be used for, like, jumping or something, but to me, that's more of acrobatics.
I can see how those three could be...
ruled that way, yeah. So we got into the family manor, you know, we were very respectful, we knocked at the door and whatnot. We were greeted by Athena, somebody that we never even met.
The granddaughter, correct?
Yes, the one granddaughter, Athena, the three grandsons, mom, dad, and then the two grandparents, where we learned grandma has already been slain.
Yeah,
that's who Sigil was referring to, Saylin, the grandma.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we got in the door, and we were all kind of stunned, kind of surprised in the first place by, hey, this doesn't look like, you know, an evil Dracula mansion. Then we saw, wait, there are more people invited here, and Nancy was sitting there playing dumb the whole time, being like, hey, nice to meet you guys. Nancy obviously being your boss, the principal.
Yeah, I was impressed by your role-playing to be able to, you know, be like, oh yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. But I was also impressed by how dumb she was to just try it in the first place, because obviously the Nick's family didn't know better, but it's still like... You have two people here that do.
Well, she first of all had to commit to the bit, and second of all, which we didn't even get a chance to get to because of the Zeke pop in the zone of truth. Well, he didn't have it prepared, but that derailed a lot of my plans that were going to happen. Was the reason why Nancy was there in the first place was she was Aaron's plus one. Aaron was going to be there, but at last minute, he texted her and canceled. Yeah.
Okay.
Which, I didn't even get to, you know,
play that card.
Yeah, I didn't even get to, you know, get that out of my system in game because, you know, everyone was on top of their toes because of that zone of truth. It was like, oh, shit.
Once you pop zone of truth, there's not much...
Yeah, there's no going back. Yeah, like, it's very obvious, you know. Anyone casts a spell, it's going to be obvious, you know, you... VSM, you know, you got your verbal, your somatic, and your material components. Casting a spell is a big deal. It's a show. You have to speak the magical words. You know, somatic is referring to your hand, so you have to make, you know, the motions, you know, trace the runes, however you flavor it.
Right.
So it was like, that is really going to be obvious. So that completely derailed, you know, the backstory of what's Nancy doing here in the first place. Why is she acting this way? Is she had to, at last minute, figure out a plan B because Aaron can't be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we got our house tour, which was honestly pretty normal. I did a lot of Googling to, like, straight up rooms in mansion because I don't know either. So they had some interesting spots, you know, the home theater, the sunroom, you know, they had that game room with the pool table and stuff, because, you know, it's just kind of, you know, higher class houses. I have no idea, you know, this is called the Nick's Family Manor.
Right.
You know, I gave it 10 bedrooms because it's a manor.
You expect some sort of size to it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is when the hints kind of started dropping as to what variety, what kind of vampires these people are. We saw a lot of books, script, text, knowledge about the different cuts of meat, how to prepare it, how to cook it.
Paintings of like your butcher cuts and type stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, when we started getting into like the den, that's when we started seeing hunting equipment. You know, whether it's, you know, shotguns, bow and arrow, whatever, pheasant, deer, turkey.
If it's meant to kill something, it's here.
Yeah, you know, and especially within, like, you know, I don't know off the top of my head because we don't live in Las Vegas nor Nevada, but, you know, we have the DNR here who regulates, you know, what season it is for hunting, what weapons you can use for that. So it's like, okay, these guys would be prepared for whatever animal and whatever weapon it is needed.
You know, anytime, any season.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of the influence behind why they have so much, which was all of the hints towards them being Nor vamps. Like we saw in the chapel room with the antlers and everything, that they're called Nor, N-O-R, because those are the last three letters of the god, Balinor.
Yep.
Who we learned a lot about him in the prior campaign. He's actually not a very well-known god. Like, even Googling him, there's maybe, like, 4 to 6 paragraphs of info, and that's it.
That's not a lot.
Yeah, which, I mean, that was a lot of the influence as to why I picked him, because I wanted somebody heavily involved in hunting and, you know, nature, and, like, I didn't want to go the Melora or the Sylvanas route. Like, I wanted somebody whose purpose is hunting. Yeah. So that's straight up. I just took the last three letters of Balinor, Nor vamps.
It works. And while being, like, somewhat obvious, we didn't put it together until, like, we started seeing the chapel with the bell and Nor, and, like, there was the insignias, and it's like, wait a second.
Yeah. Yeah, it took everybody a hot minute to fully process, like, are these people good or bad?
Right, probably, like, good in-game 10 minutes of just...
Yeah. Yeah.
Tiptoeing.
Yeah. And then when we did sit down for dinner, there was still a lot of tiptoeing because nobody wanted to say the wrong thing, basically.
For sure. I mean, it's not that it was a scary situation or a tense situation, but you didn't want to make the situation any more tense than it had to be.
Yeah, you don't want to make it worse than what it could potentially be. And, you know, on their end, the way I portrayed it was, people view us as monsters. Give us the chance to show to you that we're not.
Yes.
But we, however, knew something that Grandpa Harold didn't know, which is the three grandsons were actually drinking human blood, which is the biggest no-no of their oath possible. And role-playing as Harold, I'm a deer in the headlights, because I have no idea either.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty shocked.
Yeah, that he was completely stunned by it, couldn't exactly believe it at first, but then, like, Mercy and Zeke started telling the same story. Like, yeah, we saw this. That's when he started believing everybody, because, you know, you just say it one time, it's like, eh, you know, we'll see. Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the reasoning behind the three grandsons was, they're young. I kind of looked at them trying drinking human blood a lot like a high school kid trying pot or something. A
little experimental. I may do it again. I might not.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, see how they feel. See if they like it. You know, it's like I said, they're still young. You do dumb shit from, you know, like, from when you're like 12 to when you're like 22.
Nobody knows what you're talking about, George.
For like that decade, you do a lot of dumb shit.
Oh yeah, you do.
And that's how I viewed the three brothers, that it's like, eventually, sooner or later, someday, they're gonna get curious. What does human blood actually taste like? Mm-hmm. What is consuming that actually like? And for them, it was very much like a drug. Oh my God, this is so good. This is so much better. Why aren't we doing this? So they had to hide it from, obviously, the rest of the family, which is where the connection between them and Aaron came from when we saw them at that party a while back. Was that's why Harold wasn't there. That's why Athena wasn't there. That's why it was only the three grandsons that were with him, because they were the only ones taking human blood.
And Athena's still not a vampire, right?
Correct. Athena and Adri, the mom, are both humans. Now, technically, Athena should be a dampier. Technically, she should be, because her dad, Vero, is a vamp. So she should be half and half. But how much fun is it having two humans in there?
I think it's a very interesting dynamic because it seems to be the two females in the group are still human.
Yeah.
And all the males are vampires. Yep. It's
exactly right.
So it's like, is it a respect thing to where we don't want to subject, you know, the women in our lives to this? Or is it, you know, a power thing where we are better? And I mean, I don't see that at all, but like, you know, any other group, you kind of have that confliction of, you know, is it just a power struggle or is it just, you know, no, we respect our women and we actually kind of want them to pass on and have that beautiful afterlife.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially as Harold, you know, this dude is centuries old. He's been around. He knows that if shit hits the fan, who are we going to save? The women and the children. Like, he is that old school, I believe in these, you know, centuries old morals and beliefs. Not that, you know, I can't keep up with stuff nowadays. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have a cell phone. I know how to text. But at the end of the day, what I believe in was written 300 years ago, which I love. I love role playing as Harold, because the dude just wanted honesty. That was it. The dude just wanted, hey, I'm gonna hear you out, you guys hear us out.
That's all we're asking for.
The other big highlights of being in there was previously, a session or two ago, Pogo, Officer Pogo, gave Mercy that police report of the Nix Family Manor. And I can't remember exactly what Jen rolled for it, but she was drawn to the fact that, you know, what I envision is, you know, cops got called, Pogo comes up, knocks on the door. I'm not a cop. I don't know exactly how they work, but I figure that they would log, like, things that could be out of place, things that are interesting, you know, is backup needed? Do we need to further investigate? Whatever. So when he was in the basement, it was like, okay, maybe I'm missing something that one of my coworkers, you know, a fellow detective or something, could figure out that, you know, I might be blinded to right now for whatever reason. So there was like some dinnerware, some kids' toys, holiday decorations, but that oil lamp is what she was drawn to, and Orion and Zeke are actually the ones that got it out.
Yeah.
And then she dug up, she already knew way beforehand that, from Aaron's office, there was that peace treaty between him and the Hollowlanders, given that he killed Cassandra, Zeke's mom, and Zadarius, Mercy's dad. And it got all messy on his end because, you know, the Hollowlanders, again, much like Harold, they're very old school. You kill somebody, bring me their head, bring me a family heirloom or something. All he did was provide a grave site at the Nix Family Manor.
That's
which, no, it's not at all. And Mercy, obviously we were already in, went to the backyard, started digging. She made impact, so yeah, we got a wooden coffin, but nothing inside. No bones, no skin, no nothing. And it's not that she rolled poorly. She didn't at all. It's the fact that there was never anything put in this coffin. That basically somebody dug a hole, shoved an empty coffin in it, and put all the dirt back.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, which Jen has a very heavy idea as to why. Like, I know from an outsider perspective, you're like, damn, that's anticlimactic. That sucks. Sorry, Mercy. Like, no. To Mercy, this is good news. And for the right reasons.
Right. Dad's possibly still alive.
Yeah.
Because they just made up a grave. Who says he's not like a slave trade or
whatever? Yeah, it's perceived by everybody that he's dead. Because if you have a tombstone with your name on it, anyone's going to think you're dead. But it's like, you go through the trouble of buying or making a coffin, you know, I imagine that they're fucking heavy.
Oh, I'm sure.
Digging a hole 6 feet under, like, there was a lot of time and effort and shit put into this. And Aaron, obviously, which we'll get into more tomorrow in our session, he actually had to pay Harold. Because that's the Nix family manor's backyard. That's their family graveyard in the backyard. He had to pay him for the plot of land.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't think about all that logistic of it.
Yeah, we'll get way more into it tomorrow. But yeah, so Harold and Aaron obviously have some sort of knowledge of each other because Aaron had to buy the fucking land. You know, granted, it's just, you know, a single grave. He didn't buy the backyard. You know, the whole backyard is their family graveyard. He just bought that one area. So, yeah, he had to continuously pay off Harold because it's like, oh, you know, you're basically buying an area of land. But if you want it for whatever this... for whatever this weird-ass reason is, sure, I'll work with you, but you seem pretty desperate.
Right, for whatever reason, like, you really need this plot of land.
And, you know, obviously, Harold, it's all over his head, you know? How would he know about, you know, that peace treaty and all that stuff? You know, it's Harold. He keeps his neck out of other people's business. He's Switzerland. You know, you're a vamp for centuries. You're going to take everybody's side to not piss off anybody.
Right. Like, you can't be on anybody's wrong side if you're on everybody's side.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's what keeps you alive for this long is by not pissing people off.
And it's not that he's a shitty person, so he's having to make friends with everybody to cover his own butt. It's,
yeah.
He wants to be friends with people, so it shows that he doesn't... He's not a threat, so there's no need to like come at me, and I won't come at you.
Yeah, but which, you know, he could be if.
Oh, I mean,
if shit hit the fan,
it's a like, family of vampires. He's an absolute threat.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
he doesn't want to be.
I mean, prior to, I don't even think we spoke of it, which was a pretty big deal. Once, it was outed that the three grandsons drank human blood. Mm. He killed two of his grandsons. He killed Kyan and Sylvester right then and there with wooden stakes and everything.
That was an unexpected turn, you mm-hmm. know? As a player, I expected, and tell me about this, you know,
mm-hmm.
jail, punishment, stakes to heart.
Yeah, what was running through your head when I was like, yeah, so Harold goes upstairs, ... then he turned around. Like, what was going through your head?
Give me context again.
I'm just going on the situation. Yeah, so the three grandsons were trying to ditch. They were trying to leave because they didn't want to get outed. So Zeke was walking away with Harold to tell him about it. But then there was so much commotion going on with the three of them, you and Felix, that he came back. And it seemed like he just was sick of the conversation, didn't want to hear it anymore, that he was like gonna go upstairs and rest or something or clear his head. But then he turned around and staked them. What were you thinking he was doing when he was going upstairs?
I mean, just that. It's just kind of like, all right, I don't know how to respond to this. You know, please leave my house.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't necessarily disrespected my family, but you've spoken ill enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just be gone, human.
Yeah.
And then, no, and it ended up being...
A shocker? Was that a surprise that he staked them right there?
Well, yeah.
Good.
You don't expect anybody to just come downstairs after going upstairs and kill their two grandsons.
Oh, no, he didn't even fully go upstairs. He was, like, about to take his first step upstairs, just so he could turn his back so he could get out his one stakes.
Even then, it was a nice ploy against the grandsons. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm sick of your shit, and literally,
yeah.
I'm sick of your shit, stab.
Yeah, and then he told the third, hey, never again, because that, those two piles of ashes will be you. And then he called Martin, their little butler, in with a vacuum. And we still have to have dessert. We never finished with Harold, I could see us role-playing with Harold for a long time.
I see a very strong bond ally thing happening between me and Harold.
Yeah, potential future friend. I mean, even just in the sense of, hey, let's go on a hunting trip.
Right? I got 9 goblins that are bored.
That is accurate. That is very true. I mean, even... I mean, we are not even level 4, and we are 4 PCs. That, like, not even to scare anybody off or, like, make a DM flex. Harold alone is a TPK if we started any shit.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
From last campaign, we had a vampire that was a BBEG. And that was around level 11. And it was, you know, as I said, with 4 of us, and we had a PC die.
Rest in peace, Bill.
Indeed. during that. And I think it may have been, like, assumed, honestly. I think it may have been assumed that, like, oh, George wouldn't do that to us. He'll take it easy. He toned these vampires. Yeah. No, I didn't.
No.
You gotta remember, this is the same DM that had multiple dragons burn down his own city.
5 dragons hit one city.
Yeah, that had, you know, we had that brawl with Vecna because, you know, Val was very interested in, like, that whole, like, Craven's Edge mm-hmm. kind of thing. That, you know, he was kind of forcefully put into our Hail Mary campaign. We had a fight with him at, like, level 12. We maybe
that
lasted...
did not end well.
Yeah, we maybe lasted 4 rounds until we ditched. That, like, this is the same DM doing all of these things. You cannot pull your punches or hold back because then players are gonna think that they can get away with too much. And even if you're being overly nice about your combats, to me, I think first of all, my players will be able to tell, and second of all, you're robbing the players of an actual victory.
Yes, in several ways, because if you're toning down or purposely pulling punches, you know, in a way, it's fun, because we've already fought a beholder in this campaign, but
yep.
when it seriously counts,
yeah.
if you're pulling those punches, it's kind of like, but I really wanted a fight.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not mad that Val died, because mm-hmm. I went down swinging. I took the vampire down with me. Like,
yeah.
And that's one thing I pretty much promised myself, like, mm-hmm. if I'm dying, so is this guy.
Yeah, that's not even, like, Val saying that to himself. That's Dom
right,
saying,
like,
it to himself.
That, like, this guy's going down if
yeah.
Val has to die
yeah.
and sacrifice himself.
Yeah, and, like, a week prior, you and I were chatting a lot, and it was like, dude, have a backup character ready. And you did, and, you know, you should have 100%, but it was just that mentality of, hey, if I'm going down, you're going down with me. And, like, that's what happened, but that was one of the few times ever across all the campaigns that I've DM'd where it could be viewed as the bad guy won.
I mean, he didn't necessarily wipe the party, but...
Yeah, it wasn't a TPK.
At the end of the day, the character he wanted dead...
was you.
...is dead.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
He just happened to die along the way.
Yeah.
But the twist on that is he was a pawn himself.
Yeah.
So 100%. In the end, he never mattered.
No.
But I mattered.
Yeah. It was just, you know, it was, I've never had anything like that prior. And, like, even with the upcoming, whenever it is, I honestly don't think we'll get to Aaron for a while.
No.
That alone is going to be just so unique because it is somebody directly involved in a PC's backstory. You know, this is Karos' father.
Right, we've never had that where it's
yeah.
like...
You know, like, yeah, you can have a bad guy in your backstory that, like, you know, if you have a rogue in your party, their parents are probably dead who killed their parents. You know, that's horrible to say. Yeah, you know, that's horrible to say, but it's like that instantly makes a villain where it was, you know, a couple of sessions in where it was, we started texting and it was like, is Aaron going to be a villain? I was like, Aaron's going to be a villain. Let's do it. You know, like that alone. And it just, especially how, like, proper he is. It's like, I don't feel like it's, like, one of those, I swear, I've already made, like, 3 or 4 maps because I know whenever we're in person with him, it's a completely volatile situation.
A little bit.
Yeah, I've already made 3 or 4 maps that we've never used. I don't even think I'm going to do that anymore. I feel like the encounter with him is going to be, like, pre-planned. That, like, Karos is just going to be done with his shit. He's going to call up Dad, and you're going to be like, hey, Thursday the 19th, 10 p.m. by the railroad tracks. Click.
Bring who you want.
Yeah, you bring your friends, I'll bring my friends. I'm fucking sick of you, Dad. Like, I feel like it's going to be something that's just, like, so direct. See, and I feel like that's Aaron himself, too. That could even happen on Aaron's end, that when you start fucking right, with, like, his businesses and shit.
You're starting to meddle into some wrong-ass plans, son.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have a serious talk, or, like, we're going down. We're going down, Dad.
Yeah.
When and where.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like it'll be something like that. That it's not even like a, you know.
Oh, am I going to plan it for this week? You know, am I going to surprise the players? No, it's going to be in session.
Yeah.
Middle of the session, like, Karos, your phone is ringing. It's your dad. What the fuck do you want?
And, you know, and I think, like, even just meddling around in his office, how you guys
did, that's bad enough.
Yeah, like, that already hit such a fucking bad note.
I'm sure he's
pissed. Yeah. That, obviously, I still have more coming that I feel like I'm going to push Karos just a little bit too far. And it's going to happen where, like, you're just going to wake up one morning and you're like, Dad, fucking tonight.
So.
This world is not big enough for you and I to both exist in it anymore, Dad. I feel like something like that. I don't know if I'll do it on Aaron's end. I think it will depend on how much you guys poke at him. Felix is definitely not afraid of Aaron, which I love.
Yeah, Felix.
Felix doesn't give a fuck. Felix wants to kill him now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the funny part about that. It's just because it's like, dude, it's my dad and I hate him. But I hate him more. You hardly know him. I don't care. I fucking hate him.
Yeah, and the fact that when you pile on, whenever Felix is having, like, the weird, crazy, chaotic energy that Eric puts into Felix, you gotta remember, this is a rabbit, folk, at the end of the day. That all of these crazy things that he's saying and doing is coming out of a rabbit, folk's mouth.
Right. Like, thinking back to Meeple, one of my old characters, who was that shithead personality. He was a snapping turtle. Like, he looked like a grumpy fucker.
Yeah.
You have a fluffy, I'd imagine, white rabbit.
Yeah.
Spewing just this all this shit.
There was that character art that I found. I don't even remember how or why. It just, like, came up on, like, Reddit or something. I don't even know. And I sent it over to Eric because he had, like, this little, like, woven... Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I was just like, that is so darn cute. So I just sent it over to Eric, like, hey, I found Felix. And then he actually went with it, like, yeah! You found Felix. Okay, cool. We know what Felix looks like now.
Right. That's awesome.
All right, so I think what we have in store for tomorrow is, like I said, we gotta have dessert yet.
Dessert with vampires.
Yeah, so we're not even done with Harold yet.
I am not even mad about that.
Yeah.
Bring on more Harold.
Yeah?
I think so. I think Harold's gonna be one of those people I call when it comes time to handle Dad.
Yeah, that
just
like,
to get that extra little bit of oomph in my corner.
Yeah, that like one in every like 10, 12 sessions, it's, hey, let's go see what Harold's up to.
I think so.
That like once every 2 months, we're just going to go hang out with Harold. And after that, it is the big night. Doom comes out.
Doom.
Yeah, so we'll see if we get to the Vile One or not. You know, I'm unsure. I guess it depends on how much time we spend with Harold and how much prep we put into it, because I would say by the time dinner is done, we're going to be looking at like 7:30 p.m.
I could definitely see that.
Or maybe even later, you know, it's like I said, it depends on how much you guys actually interact with Harold, that I might have to keep on pushing and pushing in game the time of day, depending on how much you guys talk to him, that, you know, oh shit, guys, you just had another slice of apple pie. It's 10 p.m. Oh shit, we got to go.
See, and that's, I can definitely see that happening, because we were so worried about it being a bad experience that it was going to take a while to, like, get in and out and around defenses,
yeah.
And, you know, sneaking around, where it's like, We've only been there for what? Maybe an hour?
No, we've been there for a couple hours now.
Okay, but I mean, yeah. A majority of the stuff that we've worried about is pretty much sorted.
Yeah.
Well, even like just. So now it's just like, what do we do until midnight? Yeah. I honestly see us losing track of time until one of our alarms goes off where it's like, hey, you gotta start prepping for Doom. And like you said, it's 10 o'clock, we gotta go.
Yeah, exactly. which I got a lot. Oh my goodness, I have so much for Harold. Not even like backstory drops or like important lore and stuff. It's just I have so many bullet points that's like if they say this certain name or this certain faction, he'll chime in.
Oh, yeah. He's got something to say for some things.
A lot of things. He's centuries old, you know.
That's like, what's going to be my next comment. He is how old, though, it makes sense.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that haven't even come up in game yet that if you guys like, you know, say the right thing, it's like I can give you this little Easter egg of information for later just to see how it's dealt with. And then there's still that question mark of I'm not sure if Karos has it or if Mercy has it. There's that question mark of, hey dude, so by the way, we stole this lantern from your basement. What's this thing do? There's still that big question mark because it was Mercy in the first place that felt drawn to it, that she wanted it. And we did, in fact, steal it. But now it's, do we, A, open up to him about that and be like, hey, so we were in your basement, we took this, what is it, what does it do? Or B, we just keep it a secret and eventually, one day when we're not busy, turn it on, do whatever.
Part of me is honestly going towards the...
I think Karos actually has it, because you, like, hid it in your jacket, I think.
I think so. I think I stuffed it in, like, my inside pocket.
Yeah.
That does sound great. But I honestly see us bringing it out and just being, like, so curiously skin the cat.
Oh, I know what that is.
And she wants to know what this is, you know?
Honestly, that might not be a bad way to do it, because, like,
especially since it's coming from me, who's really won him over.
Yeah, you're definitely on his good side. He's pretty indifferent about Felix, because he's just so crazy that, like, the one thing that Felix has done in front of him was accidentally miss an attack against Nancy, and like, remember he ended up like drop kicking a chair or something accidentally.
Oh,
that's just like, huh, that little bunny's got some spunk.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, and then obviously there was that zone of truth at the very start where it's like Zeke is very I don't know about you. He feels pretty good about Mercy and Orion because they started, you know, being way more upfront. And that's all he wanted was, hey, you're in my house. You know what I am.
I don't know what you are.
Yeah. So let's just all take a breather. Tell me what you want. I'll tell you what I want.
We can leave happy and healthy.
Yeah. So I think other than that, that should do it for this week. You know, we got dessert and we have whatever's going to go down at GameStop with the Vile One.
I am half looking forward to that fight.
Yeah, that anti-barbarian fight.
Right, everything that is built not for me.
Yep.
Let's see how this goes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and it's pretty much the end. Not even pretty much. It's the end of our real first official story arc. Because we started at level 1, we had our session 0, which leveled us up to 2, and then with all the, like, one-shots and, like, bringing in Eric, bringing in Skylar, we had a couple of one-shots that got us to level 3, and now we're finally concluding that first story arc with the Vile One here.
We're finally there!
Alright, and we will let you know how everything goes next week.
Indeed we will. Stay tuned.